Welcome to the MacGuffin Man. I'm Alex, and with me, as usual, is James. You can check out our website, themacguffinman.com, to keep up on things we have most recently talked about. We've talked about Mother, Capote, Midnight Run, Con Air, Real Left Turn, and also I did a little re-edit of Jason Bourne that you can watch if you want to see an even nerdier exercise than what Pete Maldonado and Sam Eklund undertook. Follow us on Twitter at themacguffinman, and that's all.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. And now, here are Alex and James.
James.
Yep.
The Sam to my Peter. I think that's probably how it breaks down, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm much of a Sam, but you're undeniably the Peter. It has to be that way.
Yeah. Also, I'm not nearly as serious as Peter is, despite my rage issues, you know?
But it's... Yeah, it's undeniable.
Yeah, as with all two friends in any sort of piece of media, the goofier one is you, and the more more serious film obsessed one is me. It checks out.
Classic odd couple.
We are talking about American Vandal.
Who would have guessed that?
Who would have guessed that?
Even us a week ago didn't know this is where we were going to find ourselves on recording day, but.
That's a good point. I had finished the series a week ago and hadn't thought about it as a podcast idea yet.
This was your idea to do as a podcast.
Yes. Okay. So I guess I will explain the process. Like anybody that sits down, I mean, this show had a fantastic trailer. I think anybody that watches or that has seen American Vandal must have seen the trailer, or at least in this first wave of American Vandals, if you will. And the trailer's hilarious. Like, the premise is so stupid. The closing hashtag is hashtag who drew the dicks, which ends up being a joke in the show as well. And like, I was just so on board for this level of just stupidity, just pure stupidity, because I like stupidity taken very seriously, like a really serious serious approach to something just so stupid. And just the way, the number of times somebody says something like who drew the dicks or who did the dicks, or just like very seriously, and then the dicks were drawn, you know, shit like that. And like that was very funny. And then as the show progresses, it just sort of turns into something that I did not anticipate, and it turns into something that I think is absolutely fantastic. And when I started watching the first episode again within 5 minutes, I was like, this is the podcast. We have to talk about this. This is amazing.
I'll take a few steps back to the trailer, which I think I had a similar reaction to a lot of people from what it sounds like, that this is a really funny sketch. Like, that this isn't a trailer for anything that actually exists, but this is a hilarious video on its own. And I think people involved in making this have run into a lot of people saying that. And people I have shown have felt the same way. And yeah, this could be a really great Funny or Die video, and then it stops. Mm-hmm. And a part of the reason is it is funny on its own. And as you kind of touched on, it just doesn't seem like there's enough here for an 8-episode run. Mm-hmm. And it is because it becomes something more, but also because as you said, they play it so straight, they take it so seriously, that it is this one joke, but it's this one joke kind of drawn out and examined, taken very seriously, and then stretched out. And as much as I love this, I'm glad it wasn't 10 episodes. I'm glad they didn't feel compelled that they had to do that. Mm-hmm. Not that I want it to end when it did, but I think it only gets worse if it gets stretched out further.
Yeah, I would agree. They would just have had to have added more plot and stuff, you know. And I just think the way that it's structured now is so fantastic, and you couldn't do a third party and have it not seem hacky, especially since both parties, I think the analysis of the parties come both in the second half, you know. I don't know. It's just whatever. I don't even know what I'm saying. I just love this show.
This is a show that is obviously a few years in the making. Do you believe this was being talked about on 22 Jump Street? That seems to be a rumor that keeps popping up, but that might be a an echo chamber thing.
On 22 Jump Street?
Yeah.
So the people that made American Vandal worked on 22 Jump Street?
Well, Jimmy Tatro, at least, right?
Yeah, Dylan's on it. I don't know. That seems pretty far back, because it wasn't 22 Jump Street 2014. So yeah. That seems too far back. And then they'd be shooting it in 2013, probably. So I don't know. That just seems like a long way back. Because, like, all things considered, this show is very intricately made. There we go. Words. Certainly took a lot of time, but there's no way this took 4 years to make.
Well, yeah.
Or 3 to 4 years, you know? But I guess finding somebody that was willing to sign on to it would take some time.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They weren't filming at that point, but this was an idea that was formed by then.
Yeah, I mean, I could see the idea existing, and it's just, it has so clearly been influenced by, I mean, Serial is mentioned in American Vandal, yeah. And it's so clearly heavily influenced by Making a Murderer. Like, those drone shots of the parking lot are just so perfect, and so like the drone shots in Making a Murderer, where they're going over Stephen Avery's like car lot or whatever, junkyard. Like, oh, it's so good. So clearly heavily influenced, but I suppose I believe that the seed of the idea is quite old.
Yeah, because that doesn't seem like something that has to be a response to this big wave, you know, as we know from plenty of terrible spoof movies that not even I saw, something gets big in the culture and people want to, you know, hop on it and make an idea that kind of, or take the idea and make a comedy that pokes fun at it. But there's been true crime things before Serial and before Making a Murderer, but it just seems that it's a lot richer after that, and you can look back on those things and laugh. And in episode two, when he's analyzing the text to Trimboli, and it's the hay with two Y's, that is so completely the Nisha call from Serial. Like, it's the first thing that popped into my head. And that's a perfect example of a joke that I think would be really funny on its own, you know, outside of any context. That's a funny joke in a vacuum. But to have that foundation of another product that follows the exact same formula and the exact same structure, but that is played so seriously and rightfully so, and then this one to be, you know, within a show about penis graffiti, you know, about an anecdote about someone getting a hand job on the lake, like, it's so wonderful to have those layers to it, and funny in a vacuum, but with the seriousness that people took Serial, you know, like, it kind of legitimized podcasting for a lot of people in a very serial way, very serious way. And for this to poke fun at that and to take it back that many steps, I think really increases what would be very funny on its own.
And that the show American Vandal also comments on the sort of the way that culture reacted to things like Serial and Making a Murderer, but never actually addressed on their own show. Like when we get to episode 5 and Peter starts talking about how the episodes of sort of his show have gone viral, and you get a couple of reaction videos, one which is the American Vandals thing that I referenced earlier. You get a lot of, you know, Twitter hashtags, who drew the dicks and all that, and then you get sort of like fan, like, quote-unquote fan theories about what happened. And Serial, famously, the first season, like, I think you were deep in the Reddits of these for first season Serial, where people were just like trying to solve the case, basically. And
yeah,
and that was sort of
doing the drive to Best Buy themselves,
yeah,
the way that we get the drive to school on the map in this one.
Exactly. And it's like American Vandal actually addresses that as something that even Serial and Making a Murderer didn't do. I mean, mostly because it would be difficult to, you know.
Yeah, and it,
and yeah, also, sorry, just to continue, yeah, on that, American Vandal is on Netflix, which I think is a key part of Making a Murderer's success, as a show that people could watch 6 episodes of it at a time. Like, that's sort of just this silent commentary on the binge watch approach to a lot of true crime, you know. And I just think that's a nice added element.
Yeah, completely. And in the hypothetical world where this gets in front of cameras before Serial, before Making a Murderer, and the Jinx, I guess, would complete that trifecta.
Yeah, I don't mention that because I just haven't seen it. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. That makes sense then. But the, I would imagine this element just wouldn't have been there, the meta element of American Fandle and all these reaction videos. And there would be the Twitter response, I would imagine. But I really enjoyed when Episode 5 took that turn and took that step back, because that has become such a quintessential part of a lot of viewing. But mm-hmm. these true crime ones, or these mystery shows, as you said, like the subreddits or the reaction videos or the, you know, the whatever show Chris Hardwick is hosting now about some other show, that really has become part of the process. You know, it's made by people external to the product most often, but it really has become, for a lot of people, the way that you consume something. Like, it all comes out at once, you watch it quickly, you talk to your friends, you do your research online, whatever. And so I think that's one of the things that benefit from the show being made when it was, is to have that all-encompassing element. And as you said, like, as you brought up Netflix, I think that's another good point to that, is they knew how shows like this, or shows that this show is pretending to be, get consumed now. And so they didn't anticipate it, but I think they landed at a good spot to be one of the first shows that handled the consumption of a show like it appropriately.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I mean, they don't really say, I would imagine American Vandal is in the reality of the school that they're at, like in Oceanside, in this universe. These episodes of American Vandal are not coming out like all at once, sort of thing. But yeah, as far as like how we actually consume it in the real world, it 100% comments on past true crime consumption.
Right.
Methods.
And someone, so to live in that universe of this being a show that Peter Maldonado, the student of in Halton High, is that it?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Go Whales.
Yeah, go Whales. Go Humpbacks. Yeah, I mean, that idea is super interesting. And I think part of it is, you know, you and I were in high school when the internet, you know, was something that existed, but was something that was not nearly as important to your social life as it is for people in high school now.
Yeah, we would have graduated a year before YouTube came to prominence, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So I could...
which I think is a very clear, like, line in the growing up sand, you know?
Yeah, it's absolutely very different.
For generational sand.
Yeah. And I guess part of this is just the way schools must function just a lot more like a media product now, because there is social media and YouTube. And, you know, as we see when they're going over videos and looking over pictures and stuff like that, just so much of high school life would be documented. Mm-hmm. And the idea that like high school is a bit more like these products that we grow up on and people still continue to grow up on, I think is this interesting too. Like the way that, you know, Who Did the Dicks is this thing that gets played for laughs, but it's also this huge question for everybody in this school, right? Like it's something you can imagine them all talking about. And I just think communication like this now, like Who Did the Dicks is the equivalent of whatever small thing got blown out of proportion in our high schools when we were in it, right? Yeah. Like it's just something that we didn't have hashtags, but there's something that we all talked about like it was a much bigger deal than it really was. And I think that's one thing I really enjoy about the documentary approach to this is taking something that's so provincial and treating it so seriously.
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly.
And so you always, or you tend to take more of a media consumption approach and a more, and focus more on the high school elements of things that we watch anyway. So is there some intersection between those ideas that got you mostly about this show?
The intersection between like how real high school would be and the way the media presents high school sort of thing? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I am in any way qualified to comment on how high school is now, as somebody that hasn't been in a high school for 13, 14 years. I just think, like, oh, we mentioned 22 Jump Street, 21 Jump Street perfectly captures how I feel, how I would probably feel walking into a high school now, you know?
Strapping it the whole time.
Hey, I'd no strap it if that was even possible. But, like, so I don't know, and I don't even have, my friends that do have kids, their kids are not old enough to even be close to this age. I would love it if I had a friend who had high school age kids that I could just pepper with questions about this.
But you could watch American Vandal.
Yeah, exactly. Just take notes. As opposed to just watching it with Dawson, my friend who is the same age as me, and we're both similarly lost. But yeah, so I don't know how high school would be like. One of the things I've always wondered is how high schools like approach phones, like, because I think American Vandal has an interesting way of talking about this, in that one of the teachers, I mean, Kras, we get Kras talking about, like, people can use their phones in my class, like, pay attention, but not for 55 minutes or whatever, like, look down every once in a while, which is really funny, and I think speaks to the way that anticipation has changed over the years. Whereas, like, when we were in high school, it wasn't, I mean, fewer people had cell phones than had cell phones by a wide margin when I was in high school. And so that transition is just really interesting to me. So, but we get the Kras side of things, and then we also get the teacher that takes Sarah Pearson's iPad, which honestly, like, feel like the idea of somebody taking an iPad away and, or like a piece of electronics away for a whole semester is just seems so bizarre to me now, despite the fact that in high school I think I saw that happen, you know. And
yeah,
just that distance is really interesting. And but as far as like the combination of real high school and media high school, I can't really comment on it just because I don't know anybody in real high school. But as far as the way that the media this plays on like the media portrayal of high school, I think it does it uses a really interesting modern way of showing us a lot of the same things that we have seen in high school media. Like, I mean, let's take the greatest teen film of all time, Can't Hardly Wait, a film built around a house party. Very public breakup is a main part of the plot. There's people doing pranks, the dude from 6 Feet Under, or Jason Segel just eating the loudest watermelon in the world, Ford exchange kid having his first beer. All of these things are present in American Vandal, and but they're all shown through this very interesting lens, like the social media lens, and the way that Peter and Sam are rebuilding these parties, like all of the stuff at Nana's party, amazing, and all the stuff at after prom is amazing, just in the way that they are building this story through bits and pieces that the kids would have shot themselves. I think that's the really cool, unique thing about commenting on teens, is that they do a lot of the work for you now.
Yeah.
And just like the combination of all these different Snapchats and Instagrams and Facebook lives and all of that, I found very interesting and was something that I hadn't thought about before. And just the way that you could relive so much of a party you were at on Friday night, on Sunday morning, if you wanted to, you know?
Yeah. And about all those things, I mean, I think it speaks to how well that this is done, that doesn't feel like a checklist. Like, some writer didn't just ask their 14-year-old daughter what apps or like what people are using these days, mm-hmm, and they just go down the checklist to make sure that all the cool ones are on there.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like Twitch and Snapchat and all these different things that do provide pieces of this story to move it along, but authenticate it as much as you and I know that these things are authenticated, mm-hmm, for people who don't use these things. Yeah, but it, when you speak of Kras, who is hilarious in this, oh my by God. Way,
he's so good.
Yeah, no, he's great. But I think he's very funny on his own. But just he represents that middle ground between the students and the teachers, right? Like, he is a teacher, or he was a teacher at the beginning of the series. And he seems like someone who is so content, focused on trying to still seem like one of the students.
Yep.
And interestingly, like, fails to fit in with either of them, right? Like, the students don't respect him, and the teachers clearly don't respect him, to the point that he loses his designation as a teacher. Mm-hmm. And that speaks to me just how quickly things change. To try to hold on to something like that is obviously impossible, and that they have this insular world and you can't really force your way into it. You know, you're kind of into it, you're kind of in it or you're not. And Kraz is not in it.
Yeah, he doesn't commit to either side of the line, so he doesn't get to fit in anywhere. He just has to lift weights and drink Dos Equis in his his garage.
Oh, what a hero.
he's something.
So speaking of this show being the show that it claims to be, one put together by a high school student, how impossible would this be for a high school student to do? Like, if they were willing to put the dedication into researching as much as these people do, and mm-hmm. seemingly still attending class enough to not be expelled for at least 5 episodes, from a production standpoint, you know, we talked about the budget a bit and how this does look so much like Making a Murderer. How tricky would this be for someone to do? Because it's obviously so much cheaper to make shows like this. Like, this looks like a professional show. But what, like, from a real dollars and cents standpoint, how far-fetched is this as the show that it claims to be?
I would say not super far-fetched. I think the thing that you, like, the logical jump you have to make is to view American Vandal as something a teenager made, is to, you sort of have to imagine that Peter Maldonado is an absolute whiz kid in everything to do with post-production. Like all the graphics, digital graphics, and After Effects stuff. And I mean, there's a million like jib shots in this show that no high school kid would spend doing, like all the shots of from the ground level of the school. And Peter could get those drone shots relatively easily. But as far as like the camera work, it's like they do a good job of keeping it to a level that a high school kid could do if that high school kid was really good at operating camera. Like, you just have to assume Peter Maldonado is the one in a million as a camera operator, as an editor, as an After Effects user, as a colorist, because the color grade in the show is like really beautiful and subtle. And those are the things that you have to sort of you just have to make a bit of a logical leap, because it just seems so unreasonable to believe that he would be. But a lot of the things that the show relies on, like the social media posts and text on screen and photos and everything, a lot of those things are basically figuring out how to, like, say, the boomerang of Mackenzie drinking the beer and looking at
appealing. Which is awesome.
Oh, it's so funny. But, like, you just have to figure out how to pull something like that offline one time. And then after that, pulling every social media post is very easy. As somebody who has done a lot of repetitive editing in his life, it's usually there's one big hurdle for that type of thing, like footage acquiring. And then it's just rinse and repeat from that point on. And the cinematography is relatively simple. The cameras that they are holding, I don't know that the show is actually shot on the Sony A7S with a Canon 24-105, but that's what you see. That's what you see when we do see a camera on screen. And that is actually the camera I have found whenever I'm working with younger people. That's the camera they have, because it's a relatively cheap DSLR that you can use with Canon lenses, and also gives you a lot of room to play in the color grade, which the color correction process, which this show does. So that's a long answer of saying it's not impossible. But the idea that Peter Maldonado is this good at this many things seems very, very unlikely.
Yeah, so it's not so much the dollar figure, it's the skill that it would take. And yeah, there's a certain amount of technical skill that I think you touched on. And then also just that, you know, you said editor, and this isn't to downplay an editor, but well, I mean, it's anything, it's a compliment to an editor, but it would just take being a fantastic writer, right? Like, to structure this show as compellingly as it is structured. And I mean that in all seriousness. It is, like, I don't think anyone who watches the show really gets on board with the who drew it of it all. But yeah, that's what I was curious about. And I think that's really cool that is somewhat possible just within, just put it in the hands of a talented enough person. And this would take an incredible amount of time.
So much time. Like, and just the idea, like, I, again, I'm far removed from being in a high school. I cannot imagine that 16-year-olds have gotten less lazy, you know? And yeah. I mean, just the fact that Peter Maldonado seeing London Has Fallen at 1:55 on a Wednesday or whatever, like, that's the type of teenager I would imagine he is. Like, somebody that saw way too many movies in the middle of the day, which, I mean, describes me in high school and me now. But, like, that's the type of, like, goofy teenager that I would think Peter Maldonado still is, no matter how serious he thinks he is or how serious he appears to be. I just can't imagine any 16-year-old putting in this amount of time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, there are so many people that worked on American Vandal. Peter and Sam have to be all of them, and it doesn't appear that Sam wants to be any more than the camera operator occasionally, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and one thing I do really enjoy about when it does get escalated to the fact, like, this idea that they are really putting together this show and that they're this talented and they've put this much time into it. And you kind of get away from the idea that you're watching the product of a 16-year-old, mm-hmm. and then in episode 7 when Peter confronts Dylan about you know, maybe lying about Mackenzie doing it, he says, "You made me say the word dicks to a teacher."
One, like, of my favorite lines in the whole show.
Yeah. I think it's so good. And just that the oscillation between, like, this show being made by who it's really made by, and then the idea that it's being made by a 16-year-old who still has to go to class and doesn't want to say the word dick to a teacher. It's just so wonderful.
Yeah, and, like, there are a number of good examples of stuff like that in the show where Peter's so in it that he doesn't even realize, like, some of the stuff he's saying is so stupid. I think the first interview with Shapiro is a great example of that, when he just says, "But what about the ball hairs or whatever?" And, like, just, like, this is a thing that I've been thinking about constantly. Ball hairs is not a thing that I should be concerned about saying to an adult authority figure in my life. And then just like, what are you saying? Like, you know, and I just think the show does a really good job. And especially in the later episodes, as things get a bit more serious, of sort of throwing in these lines that jump out at us as being, like, such a disconnect, but, like, still playing everything so seriously, you know, like you made me say the word dick to teachers is such a perfect example of that. Like, there's just no better example of it, you know, because it comes right in the middle of one of the more serious moments on the show, but it's still just so funny, you know?
Yeah. And I think that kind of is indicative of a lot of things we like about this. Like we've said, it seems to be a pretty accurate representation of modern high school. Of course, we don't know, but it doesn't seem like it's obsessed with trying to seem modern. You know, it's all done casually enough and seamlessly enough to people who aren't in high school, maybe for people who are too. And all the reviews say that it's a pretty accurate representation of high school. You know, even your high school 20 years ago, just plus some technology, like, that they seem to succeed in doing these high school relationships well. But yeah, the way that it kind of functions in both worlds, the duality is so impressive, and not just because they succeed individually, but they kind of lean on each other to become more than the sum of its parts, right? Like, you maybe say dick to teachers, like, when they kind of can bounce off each other, I think is really elevates both halves of it. So do you feel that it kind of leans on comedy for a bit and then it ceases to be as engaging from a narrative standpoint, and then it the pendulum kind of swings the other way, and then it's silly, but you kind of lose grasp of, you know, what we're really meant to care about? Or how do you think it does those jobs? You think
to quote Alex Trombolli, 100%. It's like, because the first episode is so silly. Second episode is as silly as it gets. I think that 5 to 10 minutes of them trying to figure out if Sarah Pearson gave a hand job to Alex Trombolli is, like, so deeply funny, and you get Kraz in there talking about how he finds Sarah Pearson hot, and also about how
he doesn't say that. He wouldn't say that.
No, he never would. And how Rafferty, like, roofies people. Like, And just the visualizations of the camp, like every time you come back to that computer visualization of the hand job and try to figure out if they could see it from all these different standpoints. Gabby and Sam are both really funny there together. Like that 5 to 10 minute portion is just like, it's so deeply funny and taken so seriously that it's just like this perfect. It was the show that I wanted 100% because it's so silly. Like you get CGI hand jobs, but it's also taken very seriously and features some very funny teenage acting, you know? And
is the perfect synthesis of like what this show promised.
Exactly. That's it. It is. And then the Hey with Two Y's is in there too. Like it's the same portion. And just that when Peter says, I keep coming back to that Hey with Two Y's in the voiceover. Unbelievable. Like such a good VO reading. And all of that comes in like 5 to 10 minutes. I think the thing that really elevates the show is the way that the pendulum swings and the fact that it does so slowly and you don't even realize that episode 3 is a little less silly than episode 2. I mean, yes, you do because there's fewer CGI visualizations of hand jobs, but you don't really realize that episode 4 is a little less silly than episode 3. And then you get to episode 5 when Peter starts talking about having released American Vandal to the public. And it sort of confronts you with the idea of this, of real life consequences of these types of things. And that continues to, that carries the show through the second half of the season. And I think that's also what elevates the show from the dick joke that it seems to be from the premise. It just carries on through that idea and this slow change of perception that happens, from the viewer about this show, and you end up caring about it as like, I don't know, as you would any sort of piece of media that has some sort of thematic interest to it, you know?
Yeah, when you mention episode 4, that's the case against Peter too, which I think is another example of that synthesis, right? Like it's Peter taking himself so seriously, and so he kind of wants, he asks Sam to put him on trial the way he's putting everyone else on trial essentially. And it's just a bunch of dick jokes. Yeah. Like even by this show standard, it's a lot of dick jokes.
Yeah.
And you know, you get that that kind of rubber meeting the road there of this person who is taking something so seriously, but it's graffiti dicks, and you're asking another 16-year-old to take something so seriously that you don't necessarily take seriously, and you know, it's about this small world that everybody has, even though we all live in the same big world together. And this is like such a small thing, but Sam, who we kind of mentioned Gabby and Sam a bit, I think that their through line is really good, and they don't overexpose it, and I think it's a good little friend zone storyline done well, and we've seen those done so poorly so often, and maybe it's because it is kind of minimized, but it's, I think
that's exactly it.
Yeah, okay.
Because there's nothing about it that's new. But it's just that there is not a lot of it. Whereas, again, this show is so self-conscious of what has come before it and what it should focus on and what it shouldn't focus on. And the idea that that plot line is there is good. But had they focused on it a lot, it would have been really silly. You know?
Yeah.
And not enjoyable.
It rounds out this high school world, but it's not what we're here for.
Exactly. And it also doesn't make sense that there would be a lot of capturing of that story just in front of the cameras that are pointed at us, you know, or pointed at them. You know, even through social media, you can't imagine a lot of conversations that would be interesting in a storyline like that happening around people Snapchatting. It only happens at that after prom party when they're also like just sitting on a bench and drunk enough that they don't care that other people are around Snapchatting them in the background.
Yeah. And another thing that's in season 4 about kind of this combination of the silliness and the seriousness is when we look through Brandon Galloway's posts and some of Sam's reactions to it, and he's doing the shocker to the Neapolitan ice cream and like it's a funny joke, but then we see Sam not finding it funny because he thinks Gabby deserves better, and like it's just a few seconds at a time, but we get this totally, you know, juvenile joke, and then like it just resonates a bit emotionally, and then it's on to the next thing. And I think you're absolutely right that it's the fact that there's not too much of these kind of peripheral stories that would really have no right to be there, but make it feel like this full lived-in world.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. So the thing that that I just kept coming back to, so like when the day after I finished the show, my buddy Dawson, I mentioned, was over, and I was just like, have you heard of the show American Vandal? And he's like, I skimmed past it on Netflix, but he had no idea what it was other than that. And I was like, okay, let's watch an episode of American Vandal. I'm not going to tell you anything about this show. And
because it could be like a Shepherd Fairey wannabe, like American Banksy kind of thing, right?
yeah. So we watched it, and he really enjoyed it. But I was watching it for the second time, and the second I got into that intro, is like I immediately started taking the show so much more seriously than I had watching it through the first time, just because the show, again, as we said, goes through these changes throughout the 8 episodes to become something much more pointed and serious than Who Drew the Dicks. And I found that so interesting. And the way that the show ends and the way that the show begins, the show ends with like going back to the introduction of Dylan. And then when you see the introduction to Dylan, knowing everything that comes after it, it really sort of reframes the show entirely. And just the way that people feel trapped in others, like the perception others have of them. It runs all throughout the show, and it's most prominent in Dylan, obviously, because he's on trial for something that it makes sense that he would do, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he would have done this, you know? And every character we get that we spend any sort of time with, we get framed through the lens of how people think about them from the outside. You get that as Trimboli, a guy that would lie about a hand job to seem cooler, a guy that would lie about drinking 11 beers to seem cooler.
How long did you wear your cancer bracelet
for? Oh, that joke is so good.
Shout outs to my boy Trimboli,
he's fantastic in this. Yeah. The MVP is obviously Dylan, but there is like such a stacked runner-up list on this show. No,
I took a quick note when you said there was good teenage acting in this, because I think that this is wall-to-wall good performances.
Yes,
agreed. And there's not a ton of heavy lifting. Like, a lot of the emotion comes from like some good narrating and some great editing. So that's, I'm not saying that's easy to do, but it's not the thespian heavy lift that we, you know, require from some of these heartstrings. But there's so many, like Kraz is great. Dylan's great. Peter kind of has a thankless role, but is very good at what he does. Trimboli's great. That picture of Micklewaith or whatever.
Oh, God, so stellar. Good.
And Krista's really good. And Gabby and Sam are good. It's all over.
And the one person that has any sort of heavy lifting acting wise is Mackenzie. And like, it's the one sort of like real dramatic piece of acting that exists in the show. And she's amazing in that scene.
I know. And it's just a close up. Like it's
close up, one take. And just so such a difficult line to navigate, and she's unbelievable in that scene. But yeah,
and that whole her whole twist, like the idea that it was her solo, and the idea that she kind of corroborates him out of it, is just a good, like, from a narrative standpoint, just a great twist, but also performed very well, and that adds so much to it.
Yeah, exactly. And but yeah, and we just like running through all of these different characters and how they feel others view them and how they feel that's frustrating. I mean, Sarah Pearson, we don't get a lot of a character for her, but she's obviously portrayed as the hot girl at high school, you know? And you would assume that she thinks otherwise of herself, you know, like she's a person. She's not the hot girl. Yeah. And, you know, everybody just sort of feels trapped in a perception of themselves from the outside. Like, we even get, I think the way they do this with Peter is very subtle and very great. Just the way that he, during the Nana's party episode, when he talks about how he wasn't at the party, and then there's other people that he sort of views in the same class is not a great word, but you know, so that's that sort of social level of, if we're to do the Mean Girls cafeteria breakdown, that he would be at the same lunch table with. And he's just like, but I wasn't at this party. And then in episode 8, we finally get him at one of these parties doing doing what you would imagine he wanted to be doing all along. And how did he break out of that perception? By making American Vandal and trying to force himself into another class. But I think the main point of the show is that it's so difficult to change the perception of yourself and or the way that others see you, and that it really can become a trap. And as we see in the end, when Dylan actually does, it's confirmed, draw a dick on Mrs. Shapiro's
driveway.
And I just think it's like the show ends with the beginning of Dylan's first interview, and he says, my name is Dylan, and because Peter asks him, who are you? My name is Dylan, and I'm just Dylan. You know, like, that's a stupid question. The last line is Peter in voiceover saying, he's right, that is a stupid question. And I just think that's so cool that the show ends in such this sort of like circular sort of way. And the villain isn't necessarily Dylan. The villain is the perception, the way that people perceive Dylan. And I just think it's really sad for a show that's so very funny, but also very thoughtful. And it's the thing from American Vandal that I think carries over into adult life. You know, it's not hard to make the jump to being like, you know, anytime you're friends with somebody for long enough, they see you in a certain way. And it's just like, there are certain things they wouldn't anticipate you wanting to be a part of anymore. And that's just sort of, once you're in a place for long enough, you with the same people, they all start to look at you some sort of way. And there's just sort of something gets settled upon. And I think that's why high school is always described in media as sort of like a trap, because when adults look back on high school, they're like, oh, I felt trapped for 4 years because people saw me as Peter the AV kid, Dylan the dick drawer, Sarah Pearson the hot girl, Alex Trimboli the awkward nerd who wants to be cool. You know, like all of these things. And that's why there's so much, like, the way high school is portrayed is like, you're trapped, and then you get to college, you get a fresh start, you know, like you get to decide your own life or who you're going to be now. And it's the same with leaving college, to a lesser extent, in the way that it's portrayed in movies. And I think the way that American Vandal does that is so spectacular and runs so firmly throughout the show, even just characters talking about other characters, like Kraz talking about Shapiro being a cat lady or whatever, you know, she's married to a doctor, you know, like all of those things, that I just found it so interesting, you know.
Yeah, and we talk about the big pendulum swings, like it's so funny and then it's heavy, or like it's so funny and then there's like the transition where he says something funny and you realize that it's heavy, and then it gets heavy, and then he says something that's supposed to be heavy but it clearly switches it back into funny. And the big pendulum swing is that, you know, we start off with Dylan saying, that's a dumb question, and we think he's an idiot. Like, you can't even describe who you are or what you do. Like, what a, like, this stupid jock, right? And then for the pendulum to come back, like, it just comes back so full circle that him saying this thing now sounds so profound and poignant, and that we have to totally reassess the way that we looked at him at the beginning of this movie. And that, like, that's the success of this show. Like, it starts in the silly place, and then it has all this ups and downs, and it comes back right to where it started, but you have to look at everything all over again, including the way that you look at people. And I can't think of a better compliment to say than that. Like, it actually achieves something while making you laugh and think the entire time. I think Sarah Pearson's an interesting one, because we don't, you know, she's this hot popular girl is the way, you know, is the trope that she's filling this whole time. And we just don't get a ton of exposure to her as a person. You know, we see more of her pictures, and we see, you know, posts. We see people talk about her. We see screen grabs of conversations she's had. And we develop this whole personality from secondhand sources, essentially. And we just don't get a lot of FaceTime with her. And, you know, she has that ooh joke about Trimble, and it's funny, but for the most part, like, it's so about everything else. And that's the way that people perceive a popular person. You know, that's what it means to be popular. More people know you than people that you speak to, right? Like, you're thought about more than you are communicated with. And that's what I think is one of the things that's so poignant about her conversation with Peeta at After Prom. You know, she says that her list of hookups had nothing to do with this documentary. Why would you put it in there? And I think that talks a bit about popularity in high school. It talks a bit about the exploitative nature of the documentaries that this one is spoofing in particular, right? Like, there are these red herrings in here and these dead ends that make things more compelling, and they add airtime, and, you know, they throw you off the track of, you know, the whodunit that's so central to it. But you're saying so much about this person. You're saying so much for this person by doing that. And that, I think, is one of the heaviest hitting moments, is that confrontation, because we get this idea that Peeta's so happy to be out in public at this party, and he's only done so by framing all these people in a certain way and getting, you know, YouTube hits for it. But it's still all about these real people. And in a documentary, that's one thing, but by people who kind of make their way through culture or just high school by using other people as currency and just gossiping or straight out lying about other people for whatever perceived benefit. That so predates digital technology, but this show does something so well with that, by like it modernizes this very old idea and makes it very accessible.
Exactly. And you sort of take the flip side of that, right? Because it doesn't seem like Peeta and Sarah are friends. They know each other in the way that anybody that goes to a high school knows each other. A high school of a certain size, I think the population of that school is around 1,000, which is relatively small for a high school. But if you imagine the flip side, where Sarah Pearson is the hot girl / AV nerd, like, who's just super talented with all this video stuff, the way she would portray Peeta in this, in her version of the same documentary, would drive Peeta crazy, because she would use him just as sort of this person who she has no real contact with outside of these social media posts or people talking about him when he's not around, right? And that would annoy Peeta, and Peeta doesn't see the way that he's looking at Sarah until Sarah tells him, yo, I'm a person. And I think another thing I like about that scene is it sort of it confronts the documentarian as personality, as on-screen personality or voiceover personality, in a way that I think is really interesting, and more prominently, I would assume that applies to the Jinx, because I've heard the director is on screen a lot in that. And for sure applies to Serial in a way that I think hinders Serial, in the way that Sarah Koenig seems to have absolutely no self-awareness about her role in that show. And I think seeing somebody in the position of Peeta, who is the Sarah Koenig of this story, be confronted about like you are this is a thing that goes out in the world that has consequences. How do you not understand that? I found that, maybe this is just my own biases jumping out, but I thought that was a really, really cool extra element of parody that was added to this. You know, it works on that just purely character high school level, and it also works on the level of parody that the show is oscillates between operating under.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that I think that the ending of that is, that's why it's we the last real thread that can be chased down is Krista, right? We start piecing all these things together about how you know, she has the motive, she has alibi, she has opportunity and all that. But he has seen what happened to Dylan from people just assuming things, and he's seen what's happened to, you know, this is after Sarah confronts him. He has seen the damage that can be done and kind of realized that it's not his right to say these things. And, you know, to my knowledge, it's unfortunate that it was a fictional filmmaker who had to make that realization and present it in such a compelling way. But I think it, you know, it's kind of, it does something for the art form that it spoofs that the art form itself hasn't really done in a huge scale.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think the last thing I'll say about perception that I think is so key to note, and something that I think, again, further proves the interesting, more interesting elements of American Vandal, is that We talked a lot about how the acting top to bottom is so good, other than Dylan, who has a pretty small role in 22 Jump Street. Have you seen any of these actors in anything else?
No.
Okay, because I've seen Mr. Baxter in something that I couldn't figure out, and Dylan's stepdad, I've seen him in things. But like, as far as the kids go, other than Dylan, it's nobody. And I think that that really allows them to be even better, because we don't sort of know their acting tricks like we do when we go see a Pacino movie and he does whatever his new version of Hua is in it, you know? And it just, because we have sort of trapped these actors in how we already think about them. Pacino is the yelling, screaming guy that wears scarves, you know? Brad Pitt's a guy who's too hot to be a real good actor, you know, because everybody's looking at his face. And these kids, these actors in the show, have the benefit of not having been seen in anything. And so we haven't been able to trap them as this sort of, like, this is the type of character they play. And I just think that allows us to feel more strongly about their performance. It's like when The Office started, American or British, whatever you want, but The American's a better example because it ran longer. You know, you didn't know who John Krasinski was or Jenna Fischer was, and so their performances in the second season just feel more authentic than they would in the ninth season, after you've started to learn more about John Krasinski, and it's like, oh, he's married to Emily Blunt, or Jenna Fischer was once married to James Gunn. You know, these elements of personality that you start to learn about these people, and so it sort of changes the way you react to the show. We don't have enough time for that to happen with American Vandal, also because most people that watch the show probably do so in the span of 2 or 3 days. And I just think that furthers the point of the show, in that this show is able to be so good because
haven't pigeonholed everybody.
Exactly. We haven't pigeonholed everybody, and we have pigeonholed the show. It's a dick joke show, but the way that the show is able to subvert our own expectations of it and become something that I legitimately think this show is fantastic and should be talked about way more than it is. I think it's so thoughtful, the way that it shows, just depicts this one line of people being trapped by the perception others have of them. I think it's so strong and continues all throughout the show and is so well done. But that it sells itself as a dick joke, it just makes it makes its point even stronger, because it just wins you over. And it's just like, oh, it changed my perception. Oh, I shouldn't have these like locked in perceptions of anybody or anything, any TV show. And I think that's the key thing about American Vandal, is that if you lock something in a certain perception, then Dylan's gonna keep drawing dicks, you know? Like, I don't know. I just think the show works on so many different levels, in to a level of seriousness that that nothing, like, I will never properly be able to explain, because it always comes back to being a show about 27 dicks being drawn on cards, you know?
Absolutely. But
I just think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I don't think I could say it any better myself.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to the MacGuffin Man. Be sure to check back next week.